Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell, and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of super yachting is Sophia Wilson, who's looking a bit fresher than me, it must be said.
I am. Well, I did win the flight lottery in that I caught the BA 605 flight, which very kindly landed back from Florida at 6:30 a.m. yesterday morning. But how was your experience?
It was a disaster. So we, for some reason, I was on the midnight American Airlines flight. For context, we should talk about coming back from the Fort Lauderdale boat show, which we should get, we'll get onto in a second. But the whole, they're quite a big team out there and everyone kind of flooded back on Sunday mostly. And I was on a flight with five other colleagues at midnight out of Miami. And we were on the plane and I was happily just watching something on Netflix, paying, I was utterly oblivious to all that was going on. And a colleague of mine sent me a screenshot saying, oh, our flight's been delayed 3 hours. And I took my headphones off and the stewardess came over and said, the pilot is still in bed. We've just woken him up. He didn't realize he was flying today. He lives 2 hours away from Miami. Can everyone get off the plane? We're not taking off for another 3 hours.
It's quite scary that, this same man then did also fly you back. I'm not sure I trust him after.
Yeah, I know. He just had no idea he was flying. So,
did he apologize?
Yeah, he was. He was very apologetic when he eventually got over the tannoy, humbly asking for a whole plane load full of people apologies. But at that point, everyone was just, it became quite funny, actually, laughable, because it's 3 o'clock in the morning. You're wandering around the completely deserted Miami airport where absolutely nothing's open. And yeah, not ideal. And then so we got back 3 hours later. So I missed school pick, all those kind of things that you just miss because you'll pick up the kids. Of course I'll pick up the kids. I'll be having time to pick up the kids. Of course I wasn't in time to pick up the kids. But, you know, that's travel. What can you do?
No, I had a, yeah, I had a much jollier end to the show because the fans of Polaris very kindly invited me up to Soho Beach House in Miami for the day on the Sunday. So had a lovely day there on the beach. Had a nice lunch, hopped across to the airport.
How delightful. How delightful.
And flew home. Back came yesterday morning. It was all very easy. Don't know what you were doing.
Yeah, clearly you don't that midnight flight out of Miami. That's not one I'll be revisiting. I'll be coming to Soho Beach House with you and getting on a nice 6 p.m. flight. So I just wanted to start with a tribute, really. So all of our thoughts at the minute are very centered on the southwest of England because Pendennis has had a double blow. A couple of weeks ago, Henk Veerkens, the co-founder of Pendennis, very, very sadly passed away. Henk was just the most delightful human being, a great man in our industry. Knew so much, knowledge was profound, started a brilliant shipyard. And it was shocking to learn he had passed because when figures like that move on, you, especially unexpectedly, it leaves a real hole. And so I just wanted to read a tribute from Pendennis, which was sent to us shortly after his death was announced. Henk has been instrumental in the growth and development of Pendennis and has inspired generations of talent from all areas of the marine industry, the statement said. Henk was so proud and felt privileged to have worked with so many wonderful people over the years, and his love for life, energy, and endless enthusiasm will be missed by many across the world and, of course, by the whole Pendennis team. Pendennis was founded in 1988 after yachtsman and entrepreneur Peter Tsavory bought the shipyard and relocated it to Falmouth Docks. Veerkens joined the firm alongside Mike Carr shortly afterwards and helped grow the yard into one of the world's finest refit, repair and new build shipyards. So our thoughts obviously with Toby, allies, Mike Carr, Chloe, Bev and the whole wonderful team at Pendennis. And obviously in the statement they mentioned Peter Tsavory. And of course, I was on the way to work this morning and Toby, the CEO of Boat International, WhatsApped me and said, have you seen this really sad story about Peter Tsavory? I had no idea. Well, it turns out Peter has also passed away. He sadly died over the weekend. So double blow for Pendennis, double blow for the southwest of England, double blow for the marine industry. Obviously, thoughts go out to everyone, Peter's family and Hank's work and personal family as well. But it does give us an opportunity to tell some wonderful stories about Peter de Savery, because as he was just an absolute gentleman, raconteur, so many stories. I interviewed him a few years ago, and he I could have talked to him all day. He just had so many stories. And actually, the real problem with interviewing someone like Peter is figuring out which stories to include in the eventual feature. You want to write them all, but you've got to cherry pick a bit. But it was just an absolute fantastic day spent with him.
Yeah, well, Peter was obviously best known for his kind of hospitality businesses that he built up. And I was actually fortunate enough to stay at some of his properties over the years. So he was kind of instrumental behind the development of Grenada as an island, really. So he bought and developed all the area around Port Louis, which is now obviously the kind of main superyacht marina in Grenada. And he also owns Mount Cinnamon Resort there, which I was fortunate enough to stay at a few years ago, which is a lovely property. And then I've also been down to stay because I wrote a feature actually about Grenada, and I mentioned the hotel and that I'd been there. And he then very kindly invited me to come down and stay at Carey Arms, which is just near Torquay, which is another beautiful property. It actually is one of my favorite places in the world, I have to say, down there. It's got these incredible rooms that kind of, you know, all glass fronted and straight out onto this kind of beautiful cove around you. But then it's just attached to a really cracking pub. And I don't think you need much more than that in life. That's kind of the best of both worlds. So yeah, they're both really special places. And yeah, I kind of feel a personal connection to him, especially because he was so kind to kind of read that feature and then deliberately invite me to come down to another property.
Kind is a word I definitely associate with Peter. Just a really lovely guy. So he, as well as co-founding Pendennis as well, he was just an absolute yachtsman, born and bred. Like, he loved it. He staged two campaigns to win the America's Cup. As well as co-founding Pendennis, of course, he just loved everything about the sea. He loved yachts and yachting, owned a million boats in his life. But I thought I'd pick out a bit of a Peter de Savery CV because it's so interesting. So he started out in the import-export business in the 1960s, sending goods like wheat, flour, cement and steel to Africa and bringing out cocoa beans, soya and timber. There was this great quote in the piece that I wrote about him. He said, "We also supplied all the foie gras, caviar and smoked salmon to the Emperor Haile Selassie, who would have banquets for 800 people."
I mean, we should mention also, I mean, he was famously expelled from school at 16.
Oh, yeah, for sleeping with the...
I think it was the headmaster's au pair.
Headmaster's au pair. As ways to get kicked out of school, what is better than that?
But yeah, it's amazing that, you know, he obviously had this entrepreneurial spirit. And obviously it's the last lesson I'm sure you tell your children, but ultimately it doesn't matter.
Yeah. So he did his import-export business, then he got into oil in the 80s, and then property and obviously hospitality. But, you know, he was serial entrepreneur. So his life was quite stressful. And in answer to that, he said, "The ultimate drug for me to deal with it is a combination of three things. A good Havana cigar," he was always smoking a cigar, "an excellent Armagnac at the right temperature, and thinking about the wonderful boats that I've been lucky enough to enjoy and the stories and the history that go with them. It's the best medicine of all. I don't want to watch a movie on Netflix. I don't want to read a book. I don't want to go to a bar and get drunk. I don't need a psychiatrist. I just think about the boats." And some of the boats he's owned, my God, the classic Herreshoff-designed sailing yacht Vagrant that was built for Harold Vanderbilt in 1910, the 1916-built schooner Silver Spray, which was designed using the lines of the original America, the yacht which won the America's Cup. A Norwegian rescue boat called Fredrikstad that he converted into a superyacht in his Penzance shipyard and eventually sold in New York by covering its decks with a huge for sale sign that could be seen by the moneyed bankers in Manhattan skyscrapers. He owned Land's End, a 48.5-meter motor yacht modeled on a whaling boat that was built in 1965 for the King of Dutch Porn, which de Savery cruised all over the Mediterranean. He owned Klisma too, obviously, and very famously, and used her as his base for his attempt to wrestle the America's Cup in 1983 away from the New York Yacht Club, which was famously eventually won by Alan Bond's Australia team sailing in Australia 2. And this actually prompts me to talk to go on a bit of a tangent here.
I worry whenever you're going near a movie after the Jaws impression a couple of weeks ago.
no more impressions. But it does. So on the flight over, I watched a documentary called Untold, The Race of the Century. So I knew a fair bit about the 1983 America's Cup, obviously, being Australian, although it's quite hard to tell sometimes, dear listener, but I am actually Australian.
Well, one of my highlights of flips was someone at our owners' club party saying that they couldn't believe you were Australian given how like Prince Harry you looked. Which is not a comparison I ever imagined you'd have. Have you had that before?
I did have it once before when I had a lot more hair. It was when I was in a queue for a taxi in Australia and I wasn't paying attention. And a rather drunk Australian man, a few people behind me in the queue said, "Oi, Prince Harry, get a F and move on." So, yeah, once before.
There you go.
Anyway, so this movie about the 1983 America's Cup was amazing. I really, really enjoyed it. It's a great couple of hours. So if you haven't watched it, it's on Netflix. Untold, The Race of the Century is what it's called. And De Savery briefly features in it. I remember it well because I was five at the time and I was in Australia. I remember all the hype around it and everyone going absolutely mad that Australia won the 1983 America's Cup because it was the first time the New York Yacht Club had lost it.
Mm.
It was all down to Ben Lexon's amazing revolutionary winged keel and the amazing skill of John Bertrand and his sailing team. So they go into the development of the winged keel this kind of slightly mad genius figure of Ben Lexon, who I didn't know that much about before, but I was happy to learn a lot more. And he sadly died shortly after the 83 America's Cup, which is a great shame because obviously a huge naval architecture talent. And how all the boats, they've got lots of footage of the boats out the water in Newport, but the Australian team always had this big shroud around. And then once people kind of, the word edged out that it was a winged keel, then all the other teams started poxying wings onto their own keels. But it didn't work, of course, because like the winged keel on Australia 2 was so heavily researched and developed. And the racing itself was thrilling. And there was quite more of a push-pull than I thought. Because in my memory, Australia 2 just ran away with it. But it wasn't that. I think it got to 3-1. I think we got to 3-3. It was best of seven. America got to 3-1, I think. That's right. I think that's right. Correct me if I'm wrong. Then Australia pulled it back to 3-3. And then they won. Then they got to 4-3 and obviously won the America's Cup. And everyone went absolutely mad. Australia took over Newport.
There you go.
I really hope my memory is right on that. I really hope it is. Anyway.
People
can watch the documentary. But Bob Hawke, Australian Prime Minister at the time, one of his most famous ever utterances, he said, if anyone, I'm going to do an impression of Bob Hawke now. He says, if any boss fires their worker for not showing up tomorrow morning, he's a bum. That was the headline news, obviously, because Bob Hawke was saying to the entire country, stay out, have a very good night, and don't go to work tomorrow.
Is that going to be the case if Ainsley wins the next America's Cup?
Yeah, absolutely. If the Brits can bring home the America's Cup next time, then no one's expected at work tomorrow morning, the next morning at Boat International. I think it's absolutely fair enough. But anyway, after that tangent and more terrible impressions after my vow never to do them again, to Peter, Peter's family and friends and the whole boat building community, we've really lost a special, special guy. So come and if you want to know more about him, there's loads written about him at Boat International. Learn about some of his boats and his past and the amazing things he did. And obviously, we will never see his like again. I think that's for sure. So moving on to flibs. Sophia, what impressed you?
Well, it was my first flips, which I think we discussed before. So I loved the show, the atmosphere. It was great to be out there. It is huge, though, and the logistics are quite something in terms of getting around the place. And it was, as warned, quite hot. But no, I love the show. I love the atmosphere. Everyone just seemed to be just a few degrees more relaxed than perhaps they are in Monaco or Cannes. So I love that element of it. I also was able, because it's a little bit longer, was able to get on board a couple of yachts, which is always nice, because sometimes you feel like you spend your whole time just in meetings rather than actually looking at anything. So I went on board Maverick, which is the second Ocean Cove 50 model, but it's had lots of personal adaptations for her owner. I believe it's at least the second that he's owned as well. So he's kind of refining and moving up in size as well. Alberto Mancini was responsible for the interior and exterior design. And I spoke to him. He was on board while I looked around, which is always great. And he really explained the whole ethos behind it. And he really wanted the owner to feel like he was stepping into his own personal resort when he was on board. And one element of this is that the owner loves pools. And as he has a chase boat, rather than needing lots of space for tender storage, they've basically used the foredeck to create this huge infinity pool. And it's one of the, it's one of the most impressive pools I've ever seen on board. It's got kind of massive sun lounges in it. And then there's also another pool on the sun deck, if that's not enough for you. The yacht was awarded best in show, and it was pretty easy to see why, having a wander around. So I'm going to be writing the yacht report on that one, which will obviously have a lot more details. I'm not sure that's got an issue yet, but I'll let you know once that's officially scheduled for an issue. You didn't get a chance to get on board that?
I didn't, know, but like you said, you know, it is just slightly a few degrees less mad than Monaco and Cannes. So you are given a bit more time to actually go and see boats, which is always nice. So I got on a fair few, but I think one of the ones I was looking forward to most was the CLX 96 from CL Yachts, which no one had seen before. I'd only seen pictures of it, and the design is not traditional, I think. No. It's fair to say. And so whenever you see a boat like that, you kind of think, well, why does it look like that? Is that a function of its interior? Is it just an expression? Is it quirkiness for the sake of it? So I was delighted to get on board and have a really, really good nose around, and actually very pleased to say that this is one of the most innovative boats in that size range I've ever seen. The amount of space it offers you, the amount of different zones it offers you. There's got to be four or five different seating areas on that boat, which is phenomenal for a platform like that.
I love the master on board as well. I thought to have that kind of size and feel of space in a master for that size of yacht is pretty impressive.
You're right. The master was good. And even the VIP, the midships VIP, yeah, was very impressive too. The champagne kind of lounge area under the main deck windows forward, it was just a really lovely, inviting space. The country kitchen, obviously, which is very popular with the North American market. And actually, again, for a 96-foot boat, I thought the crew quarters were okay.
Yeah.
Usually they're kind of crammed and it's dark and dingy down there, but actually it wasn't too bad. So Joseph Farakis, the Milan-based designer, was responsible for the boat's exterior and interior. So he's never done anything like that before.
No, and they deliberately chose him and basically told him to rethink yacht design and yachting experience, which I think is why her profile is very different to what you'd see.
Very architectural, which, yeah, I don't think you get the right impression looking at renders of it or at it from a distance. But once you're on board it and you're up close with some of these quite wild shapes, it's actually quite impressive. And some of the thinking is, for instance, the skylight in the master cabin, which you can't see into from the forward raked windscreen of the champagne bar on the main deck above, nor the bow seating area, but so offers this kind of private window into the world. And then it's also shaded by the overhang of the forward raked main deck windows. Hopefully you followed me there. But if you have a look at the design and the boat and the pictures, hopefully that becomes clear.
I also love the fake skylight in the VIP.
So that's right. So there's a fake skylight in the VIP. So you look up and there's a...
It is a skylight, and it goes to a camera that, yeah, is on the top of the yacht. So you're getting a live stream of what it looks like about the yacht. So if a bird flies past or it's a starry night or whatever, you will see that above in that skylight, but it's actually a video screen showing down from what the camera's shooting above, because obviously it's underneath, midship. So
I think we're going to see a lot more of that.
I think it's really clever. Apparently, yeah. I was speaking to Joseph on board, and he thinks it's unique. He doesn't think there's another one. I certainly haven't seen that idea anywhere else before.
I have. Wally have used it in one of their tenders, but it's not widely used, certainly. Mm. But I mean, it makes total sense, right?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Bring in an outside view to a cabin with no skylight. Yeah. But I think it says something of all the, what felt like thousands of boats at FLIBS. The thing that really made me stand up and take most notice was that the CLX-96, I really was quite impressed. So hopefully they'll sell a bundle of those, because I think what Joseph has done and what CL Yachts have done and the faith they've showed in him is really impressive. Hopefully the market will respond.
Well, yeah, I mean, BNCT obviously was fully created with the American market in mind, hence the kind of galley kitchen and various other things. But yeah, I guess this show will be a good tell as to how receptive the market is. I'd imagine very.
Absolutely. So I think Cecile said the feature for that will be going into the January issue of BI US and probably the February issue of BI. So if you want to see them in print and read her impressions.
Probably a bit more cohesive than our ramblings.
Don't miss those issues. So what else? I mean, I thought getting between the two bits of the show was a bit of a pain.
Yeah, so I at one point was very hot and stressed trying to get between the two different parts of the show and could not work out where my Uber was meant to be picking me up from, and saw someone wearing a Darman badge that I'd never met before and just said, "Hello, can I get in your car?" And he very, very kindly did. But that was the level of kind of panic that I was in, that I was just throwing myself at random, very charming Dutch men.
Yeah, I think I was at one point, I was standing, I should explain, so that there's two bits. There's the kind of Bahia Mar-centered part of the show, which is a lot of brokerage boats and smaller boats. And then there's something called the Superyacht Village, where like the Lursons and the Ocean Coes and the Deltas have stands. And there's some yachts over there as well. But getting between the two requires a water taxi or a private tender transfer if you have access to a private tender. At one point, I was standing there waiting to get a water taxi back to the Bahia Mar bit, and I was just, it was 30 degrees. I was not happy, bit sweaty. And there's no shade. There was no shade. So it was just like my bald patch was frying. Could have fried an egg on my bald patch. And then kindly, the Burgess guys took pity on me when they saw how sweaty I was, and I jumped in the tender with them. But it just, the tender pickup point at the Superyacht Village was not fit for purpose, in my view, for getting people to and from the other part of the show.
No, well, that's why I was trying to do it by road. There were also golf carts, but I couldn't work out how you flagged one of those down.
So I was lucky to get a VIP, I had a VIP badge, and if you get the VIP badge...
Of course you did. Now it comes out.
You got to use the little golf buggies. But that was good. That was actually a good way, because it only takes a couple of minutes to whip around on the golf buggy. But they weren't always available at Bahia Mar. It took me a few days to figure out the golf buggy trick. But I abused it once I'd figured it out. But the Superyacht Village generally, I thought, felt pretty empty. I mean, some exhibitors loved that. They said only really qualified, quality people make the effort to come over here. So you got more chance of running into a buyer or someone that even, might be in the market. But others said it's wasteland. It's a bit of it's quiet, tumbleweeds. It just felt a bit
Yeah, I low. Quite liked escaping up there, because the main show feels a bit like kind of Monaco meets Disneyland.
Yeah.
And it is quite, it's fun, but it's pretty full on. So I quite like kind of escaping up there, but it was quiet.
They did have that massive box in the middle of it, which was quite nice. It's an air-conditioned space to have a drink or a meeting. But walking around all the exhibits, it just seemed like lots of the same people talking to each other for 4 days. I don't know. I mean, I'll catch up with people over the next couple of weeks and see what they thought. But I'm not sure that has quite been cracked yet from a show and a spectacle, an exhibitor and guest experience point of view. I think there's a bit of refinement needs to be done. And then Pier 66 was looming over the whole thing, really. So Pier 66 was becoming a huge development, and work is well underway. And obviously, very keen to see what that's going to look like and how that might affect the show when it's eventually finished.
Yeah, do you know when it's scheduled for completion?
I don't know.
I mean, but it looks a way off, but then it's so hard to tell with these big developments because
yeah,
if you've got enough workforce on it, it suddenly comes together very quickly.
Yeah, but it's about time. I mean, I'm excited to see that being redeveloped.
It's Joe Lewis who's behind the development.
That's right. And Joe Lewis is doing all that. And then Aviva obviously was the biggest show in town, biggest boat in town, also the biggest show in town. Walking, sitting in Pier 66 Marina. We had really successful happy hours on our stand, which was good. Coconuts still does a really good Bloody Mary. Always nice to relearn that down at Coconuts.
How many days were the Bloody Marys required?
a few days and a few Bloody Marys. I also discovered something called Scoobies. So coconuts, I never had it before, but these Scooby crab claws, you can have them as a starter. They are absolutely delicious, but they're the most garlicky thing you've ever eaten in your entire life. So just pack lots of gum if you're tackling the Scoobies.
Good intel.
And then the other thing that struck me was how many owners were talking about Starlink. We did an owners club event on hospitality, the 50 meter Westport. And Gavin, the skipper, great bloke, great captain, was talking about they've had Starlink installed. And he says it's absolutely magic. And then the same evening, I must have had two or three other conversations with owners that said they'd had Starlink installed. Or even if they'd just bought the RV version of Starlink and just kind of stuck it on a hard top somewhere. And then the owner of Artifact has just sent me a screenshot of the download speeds he's getting on his boat because he's just had Starlink installed. I mean, it's crazy speeds. So, I mean, it's definitely penetrated the super owner community. So, interesting to see.
It's Elon Musk who's behind it.
Yeah, right? Elon Musk. So he launched Starlink. And so now the maritime version is definitely firmly available. So these dishes are getting slung up on radar masts all over the place. But speaking of more about hospitality, I mean, she's such a lovely boat. Such a lovely boat. The owner, such a nice guy. You know, some boats you walk on and you just think, happy ship. This is a happy, happy ship. And brilliant owner, brilliant captain, crew very, very attentive. And in immaculate condition, that boat as well. It's an absolute charter machine.
I'm not surprised. I mean, that Sunday, such where we had the party, it's just such a lovely space.
Yeah.
Felt really roomy. I mean, I don't know how many people we had up there in the end, but at no point did it feel remotely
57
plus staff or with staff
excluding staff
so probably more staff. You know, over 60 guests up there, and at no point did it feel busy or like you were pushing past people, or it's a great space.
Is it? Yeah, huge sun deck on those 50 meter Westports, really, really nice. And the they were saying they've just had one of the most successful charter seasons ever. 16 weeks or was it 16
wow.
weeks or something? Absolute crazy. So, the crew is just so well drilled. Just, yeah, perfect, perfect chartered crew. So that was a lovely evening. Great night. But no big boat international party or Lursen party this year. We're going to see if we can bring that back for 2023.
Yeah, I think it was funny not having that party. I feel like different people had sort of different big nights, if that makes sense. I feel like normally there's very much a kind of sense that it's sort of building towards something, whereas it felt a little bit more scattered this time.
Yeah, it did, yeah. Because usually at the boat show, there's obviously this big landmark party that everyone goes to, but without that, it felt a bit weird.
Yeah, I had lots of people, particularly on the Saturday night, kind of saying, what are you doing? We obviously had our owners club, which was lovely, but that's also a slightly earlier evening event.
Yeah.
There was definitely a hole missing, I think.
Yeah. Talking about events, we should probably do one last little plug here for the Explore Yacht Summit. Sophia, would you like to take this away?
Yes, I would. So as I flew back from FLIBS, the panic about the Explore Yacht Summit being now 8 days away, sunk in, but it's all very under control. So it's taking place next week, November the 10th, at the Yacht Club de Monaco. We've obviously spoken about it a lot, but just to quickly reel off a quick hot list of kind of speakers and topics. So we're going to kick off with the state of the market, which will use BoatPro data to give a really thorough analysis of exactly what we're seeing in the Explorer yacht market, what's in build, what's for sale, what trends are we seeing. Then our keynote of the day is going to be by Victor Vescovo, who, of course, has just done the most incredible adventures with his Triton submarine. We've also got a great handful of some of the leading brokers in the market, and they're going to talk about the growth of the adventure charter. Then we've got a brilliant designer panel looking at what Explorer Yachts by 2050 might look like. So that includes Jim Dixon from Winch Design, Enrique Tintore, who obviously is behind the Sea Explorer range. We've got another panel on the rise of the superyacht support vessel. We've got also talking about top island destinations. And for that, I've got a couple of really experienced captains, so the captain of Seawolf and the captain of Pioneer. And then we're going to finish the day with Lord Irvine Laidlaw, who's going to be talking to you, Stu. And Stu, you are also on hosting duties for the day.
Yeah, terrifying.
So I'm halfway through your script.
Oh, excellent. Irvine Laidlaw, closing the show. I think it's we've got an owner beginning and an owner closing. Irvine's been everywhere, and Lady Christine and Seaflower. So he's got loads to say, and he sent me a whole bundle of photos earlier, and there's some fantastic ones there. So I think it'll be a really entertaining way to close out the show, and then we can have a few drinks and carry on. But tickets still available, last few, so pick them up today.
Yeah, worth it just to see you emceeing for the day.
Yeah, some terrible jokes.
Impressions, the whole works, people expect?
Yeah, you get a Chief Brody Jaws impression. Now I've done
You've done two Aussies today.
Yeah, I've done a Bob Hawke impression. I suspect my Bob Hawke one might have been a bit more close to the truth than the Jaws one. Anyway, let's talk news.
So first up is that the 85.3 metre Silver Yachts Explorer Project Global Fast has been delivered following successful sea trials off the west coast of Australia. So the yacht, which is understood to be named Wanderlust, is the second hull in the shipyard's all-aluminium Silver World Explorer series and joins her sister ship, Bold. The two share a similar military-style exterior profile, which was designed by Esteban Bueno, with triangular windows and a band of tinted glazing amidships. Onboard highlights include a commercial helipad, hangar, refueling facilities, and a large aft deck with an 8-ton crane for launch and recovery of toys and tenders. True to her name, Wanderlust will have a range of 5,800 nautical miles, which is actually more than her sister ship, allowing her, of course, to spend long periods of time at sea without needing to refuel. Also under construction at Silver Yachts is the 79.5 metre Project Silver Edge, which is another Espen design, and was started on spec earlier this year.
Thanks, Sophia. Next up, we have the news that Italian shipyard Carantieri della Marche has been acquired. The acquisition of the shipyard has been completed through a management buyout with Austrian firm FLI Bros Family Office, joining the company as majority shareholder with 75% ownership. The remaining 25% will be held by the company's co-founders, Ennio and Vasco. Vasco will assume the position of CEO, while Ennio has been appointed president. According to the shipyard, the acquisition has been agreed with a long-term vision in mind that will be achieved through grounded and pragmatic actions while keeping all those precious characteristics that make CDM an internationally reputed player: quality, exclusivity, and great attention to each client. Actually, if you want to see, so Akala was one of the standouts, I think, from the Monaco Yacht Show. Everyone said great things about Akala, the latest custom CDM. There's a bit about her on the website now, so do have a look at that, because she's a really lovely boat.
And I promise that one's my last Explorer Yacht plug, but it's not. Vasco's also going to be at the Explorer Yacht
there
Summit.
Vasco coming to the Explorer Yacht Summit, so you must come too.
Finally, Dutch shipyard Heesen has hinted at a new 50-metre steel displacement series, which is currently in development. So this was very lightly announced at Flips, and the new line is an evolution of the current 50-metre steel range, but has been reimagined to offer a completely new yacht, according to the yard. One of the key changes is the introduction of a fast displacement hull form, which aims to balance comfort and stability with more efficient and fast cruising. Like all Heesen yachts, the owner will then be able to select the propulsion package to go with that. The design team hasn't been unveiled yet. I know Heesen are kind of asking us to guess, but it will be apparently in December this year, along with the first renderings of the model. So we're looking forward to hearing more about that when the details are released.
Yeah, steel displacement series, 50-meter steel displacement. That's that is big news from Heysen.
Mm.
Okay, I look forward to hearing
more
on that score.
Bets on the design team?
No bets from me. I usually get a whisper about these things, but I haven't actually in this instance. So I'll be watching this story very, very closely indeed. And that brings us to an end of this week's boat briefing. Thank you for tuning in. There's no data because Raphael, our guru, is down in Fort Lauderdale taking photos of boats. And he's also neck deep in data for the Global Order Book and Explorer Yacht Summit.
Yeah, final plug.
That is the final plug. So he's excused from data duties this week. Thank you, Sophia.
My pleasure, as always.
And thank you for tuning in. This has been a production of Boat International Media and was mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen. Don't forget to like and subscribe. And we'll see you at the Explore Yacht Summit.